Hi, everybody. I'm Brett Ratner, the director of Rush Hour. And Rush Hour is my second feature film, my first feature film I did when I was 26 years old for New Line Cinema, also called Money Talks. Chris Tucker was in it as well. And this is my second feature film, and I'm 28 years old now, and it's been a great experience. Growing up as a child, I watched a lot of Jackie Chan movies. I was a martial artist myself. I took karate, and I was always a big fan of his. So when I finished Money Talks, I told my agent I really, really wanted to do a movie with Jackie Chan. So she gave me 5 different scripts. And out of all the scripts I read, Rush Hour was not necessarily the best script, but it was the best one for Jackie Chan. It wasn't a typical martial arts movie. It was an American buddy picture. After they approved me, they said, okay, now you got to convince Jackie Chan to do the movie. So I was totally freaking out. I'm like, what do you mean I got to convince Jackie Chan? Yeah, you got to convince Jackie Chan not only to do the movie, but to do it with you. And since you want Chris Tucker in the movie and he doesn't know Chris Tucker, you got to convince him to put Chris Tucker in the movie. And I got on a plane, and I didn't sleep the whole way, and all I did was read all this press on him, and I was like, oh my God, I'm sweating bullets the whole flight. And I get there, and I said, okay, how am I going to convince this guy to work with me? He's been making movies longer than I've been alive. So I sit down, and I said, I just got to be honest. And I sat down, and I told him, basically, I said, okay, this script sucks, but I think I know how to make it better. So what I did was, I told him also, I said, Jackie, in order to succeed in America, you have to do a movie that's a typical American film. I want to put you with real actors and let you concentrate on the acting. And then it's going to take you to a next level. And after we started shooting, and after, of course, he said yes and we did the movie, he came to me and said, you know why I agreed to do this movie? Because every producer and every director in Hollywood and every studio said, Jackie, this is the best script I've ever read. And you're going to be a huge star in America. And this is incredible and it's brilliant. And I basically convinced him that his physical comedy with Chris's verbal comedy would make a great combination. And this is what you're seeing here, really. This was a scene that was really a plot-driven scene. It wasn't a scene that was supposed to be for a big Jackie moment. And, the funny thing here is that I gave Jackie the lines in English, and I said, do it in Cantonese. And he said, no, I should do it in Mandarin, because now all the Asian countries are Mandarin. So he does it in Mandarin. And then when he came back to America to do some looping stuff, which I absolutely hate and refuse to put in my film, I think there's maybe one loop line in the entire movie, you know, Jackie's manager was sitting there and said, what did you just say? Roll that back. And Jackie's manager didn't understand a word of it. And I said, you know what? No one in the United States is going to notice that his Mandarin is not proper. Here we were in Hong Kong, and Jackie was kind of showing off that we didn't have to take 4 hours to prep a stunt, that look how fast he could put it together, boom, 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 and he could have this huge container. So Jackie went ahead and had it like a 10-ton truck pushing a 5-ton container against the other container. The first take that we did in this shot that's actually in the movie, Jackie slips. He makes it up the wall. He slips, falls backwards, and I swear his head was half a second from getting splattered like a grape. You know, I wasn't trying to do a Hong Kong film here. I wasn't trying to do a Chop Saki typical martial arts movie. I didn't speed up the camera. I didn't do any jump cuts or time cheats. I really tried to shoot it as simplistic and as realistic as possible. Forgive me. Out the window is Hong Kong, and then the camera pans around, and you're in L.A., in the house in L.A. Of course, the house is supposed to be Hong Kong, but, you know, it's amazing when you can do that. I'm the type of person that wants to surround myself with the best people possible, with the best cinematographer, the best stunt coordinator, the best editor, the best crew that I can get, because when I'm older, when I'm Ridley Scott's age, I can work with the hot, young, hip guys. But now, I want to work with guys like Lalo Schifrin, who maybe 20 years from now won't be doing movies, you know, and have done 100 movies and have that experience behind them, because I learn from those people. You know, I'm always trying to learn something. What I wanted to do is I wanted to surround Jackie with the best actors possible, which is really going to elevate him. And Jackie's a good actor, and he can really work off of great people. Greatness breeds greatness. And, you know, Tom Wilkinson is so excellent. I mean, you know, when I called him in England the first time, he said, you know, you don't have to do multiple takes with me. I get it on the first or second take. I know. I'm sure you do, Tom. You know, I mean, this guy comes from Shakespearean theater, you know, in England. I had him smashing a briefcase on Jackie Chan's head and doing these physical action sequences, which was amazing, and I was very happy to get him for this film.
To Hong Kong, forever.
Here's the little girl, Julia Hsu, who really was a pleasant surprise in this film. My casting directors, Matthew Barry and Nancy Greenkeys, went to a bunch of schools in L.A. and even, I think, looked in New York as well to find a young Asian girl. And I even went to Hong Kong and did some casting. And out of everybody that we saw, she was really the most special. I mean, she has a lot of personality. She's very smart, and she was great. She's never been in front of a camera before and has no desire to be an actress whatsoever. This was actually one shot before we went back and did an insert. This is one long crane shot, which I was very proud of, and it needed Chris's jolt in there. Here's Chris Penn, who's one of my favorite actors ever since I saw him in Footloose. I called him up and I said, can I meet with you? I got to get you to do this movie. And we sat down, and the first thing he said to me, he goes, let me tell you something, Ratner. Let me tell you something. I will kick Jackie Chan's ass. I want you to know that I'm a professional boxer. And that Chris Tucker, I'll smack him. I don't care. Let me tell you, I am not afraid of these guys. And if I have to, I will kick their ass. Like, okay, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Come on, man. Don't be late again.
This scene was a great opening scene for Chris and for Chris Tucker and Chris Penn. And, you know, these two guys, the contrast between a Chris Penn and Chris Tucker, I think, is also what works. You know, we did a lot of takes here because Chris Penn tends to curse, especially when he gets violent. As well, Chris Tucker tends to curse. And we were really trying to go for a PG-13 here, unlike Money Talks, which, you know, only made a certain amount of money. And we thought, you know what, let's make a movie for the kids now. Let's make a movie that kids can enjoy, because Chris Tucker really and Jackie Chan have so many kid fans, you know. And, the guy here, one of the cops, he's from Boogie Nights. He was the guy who was simulating the blowjob to Heather Graham in the classroom scene. It was one of my favorite cameos in Boogie Nights, and he was actually the guy that Roller Girl beat up outside of the limousine on the floor, and he was great. Kai Lennox is his name. Chris Tucker was so into his karate mode. You know, he's very competitive. He wants to be as bad a badass as Jackie Chan. He wanted to flip Chris Penn over his shoulder. I said, Chris, you weigh 170 pounds, okay? Chris Penn weighs 250. How are you going to flip him over your shoulder? So I said, okay, let's present it to Chris Penn. We presented Chris Penn. Chris was like, you're not going to flip me over my shoulder. You can't even lift me. Are you crazy? He goes, no, but I'll do it like karate style. You know, you'll help me. You'll jump over my shoulder. Like, no. It's not going to work. I go, Chris, you're going to turn around and sucker punch him, which is the best way to knock someone out. You're going to sucker punch him, and he's going to go down. And then that's what I convinced him to do. Terry Leonard really choreographed all these car screeches and all this stuff, and it was really a lot of fun. And all the insert stuff I shot with Chris Penn and Chris Tucker, and Terry really did all the car stuff. And then when they went back and got that of Chris Penn, you know, rolling out of the car. This Michael Jackson thing, we did it as a fluke. We just, you know, I played some Michael Jackson music on the set, and Chris just started dancing. That's why people come to see a Chris Tucker movie, for those type of moments. But I'm happy I shot it, because I would have probably ended up going back and shooting something there to make the scene more exciting. Adam Greenberg, it's almost like shooting with him is like taking a math class with a calculator. Not only is he so incredible, but he's so fast, and he gets it. You know, his English isn't very good either. You know, Adam's from Poland and lived in Israel for many years. He has a very bad accent. So it was a unique working experience. But he gets it. You know, he's an older guy. I mean, he's been shooting movies for over 30 years. And he's one of the only DPs that I know who will set up, you know, lights, and he'll know exactly what it's going to look like, because usually DPs will tell the gaffer what he wants. They'll see it and then have to tweak it or change it. Adam knows exactly what it's going to look like before he puts the lights up even. It's amazing. And the turnaround, the reverse, is 10 minutes. So when you're doing a comedy, and I want to do a lot of coverage and a lot of takes, it's really helpful to have a DP who works at that pace and still gives you the quality. This for her was what the Michael Jackson was to Chris. And I did that in my music videos a lot. I would open a scene. I remember doing a music video where I had an artist in the shower singing in their own voice, because you only had heard the artist singing on the record. And when you hear them singing in their own voice, it makes you like them. It makes you feel like you know them. And that was really the purpose of doing this. This guy, Ken, is an amazing actor. I looked at about 100 different actors for his role. And initially it was someone who was a martial arts expert. And I said, I don't want to copy a Van Damme, like I said, or Seagal movie. I want to have someone who's a strong actor, who's believable, who can intimidate people with his eyes and with his character. She really kicked him in the face here. She really kicked him in the face, and she really hit him as hard as she could. This guy was so subtle and so believable and so real. And if he wasn't, you know, it wouldn't have worked as well. As a child, I went to the movies every weekend with my grandfather, and he didn't speak very good English. He was from Cuba, and his English was okay, but we would only go see action movies, because action movies you don't really have to understand. You just enjoy the visuals. And then I would explain to him what was going on. So I was always analyzing movies or trying to explain in this most simplest way. And that helped me with my storytelling skills.
Security's in place?
Yes.
And you're sure all of the exhibits will be ready by this weekend?
Yes, sir. Your opening remarks are scheduled for 7:30.
Fine. Excuse me.
Here's two of my favorite actors, Mark Ralston, who I picked because, he did a great audition as well, but I saw him in Shawshank Redemption, and he was such a badass. I thought, okay, he's a bad guy. He always plays bad guys. I'm going to make him an FBI guy and do something different for him, which would be a challenge for him. And then Rex Lynn, who has done so many movies. You know, he's Kevin Costner's boy, but now he's my boy. Now he's going to be in all my movies because he's so funny. He really, you know, is a great actor, and the two of them together was just great chemistry. I tried not to just say, oh, this guy's great for the part. I said, is he great for the part, and is he great standing next to this guy? So I try to cast people based on their relationship with the other characters that they're going to be in the scenes with.
Mr. West, I am not an American. My daughter, she is not an American.
I understand that, sir, but...
He's already on the plane. I trust you will treat him with the same courtesy as you have shown me.
Yes.
10 people just jumped out of the trunk. I started handling all of them, just started slapping them, throwing them everywhere. Then 2 stupid cops came out of nowhere.
Chris is great at doing this, just bullshitting and making up shit, you know, off the top of his head. This stuff was all ad-libbed. We did about 5 different takes.
I can't believe you went without me.
Here's Elizabeth Peña, who is an awesome, awesome actress. And she's good because Chris needs someone. You know, Chris is the type of guy who will steal a scene. And she has the skills to stand toe-to-toe with him and really get the most out of him.
I work alone. I don't want no partner. I don't need no partner. And I ain't gonna never have no partner. Did Kojak have a partner?
Yeah, the fat guy.
She's the type of actor that will go to the bomb squad and research, you know, with the bomb squad, of the right instruments to use, what a bomb is supposed to look like. Richie Kramer and Ron Patterson, my prop master, they really did a lot of research as well. But, you know, doing the research on the look of the bomb, on creating the bomb, but it's really the actor who has to handle it and act with it and, you know, diffuse it. So Elizabeth doing that research really helped her with her performance and helped me with legitimizing the role. What I love is a cop coming up to me from the bomb squad saying, yo, that's really how it is. That's great. That's really how we test the bombs. And that makes me feel good as a filmmaker, even though Elizabeth did all the research.
John, somebody told you I was going to spend it.
This is a problem. That's all I need is some foreign national getting his head...
Here, this is something that Jeff Nathanson, one of the uncredited writers in the script, came up with, which is one of my favorite moments from Rex Lynn when he says, if we're going to humiliate someone, might as well be LAPD. I mean, it's just such a great, smart moment. And Jeff really added a lot to the script here. And as far as establishing who these guys were and who these characters were and where they were coming from.
Well, even if I had an extra man...
The scene right here in the police station, the shot sequence, I kind of influenced me from True Romance when Chris Penn was in the police station talking to his boss with his partner. But it's just basically the same thing, but without the smoke. No smoke. You know, smoke is very 80s and it diffuses the... You know, I like very clean frames, you know. Tony Scott likes to use a lot of smoke and stuff, so that's really the difference.
What's a pinky?
But did nobody die?
You destroyed half a city block.
That block was already messed up.
And you lost a lot of evidence.
Philip Baker Hall, one of my favorite actors. I mean, when Chris gets in a room with someone who has so much experience, it really elevates him. And a really good actor is really going into a boxing match with a fighter. You know, it's like they're throwing punches at each other. And, you know, it's really, you see the chemistry and the energy between these two guys. He didn't know Chris Tucker, never met him before, never seen him before. And just from doing the scene with him, he knew what he was about and knew how to approach him and how to lean forward and get in his face. That's right there was my favorite line that Chris ad-libbed when he said, so you mean I'm not going to get suspended? And Chris, he's like, I don't even know why I said that. And that's just such a great, it doesn't really get a big reaction in the theater, but it's, for me, it's just it's the brilliance of Chris Tucker. It's a brilliant moment that's subtle, that's funny, that's natural.
Woo!
Congratulations, Carter.
We did it.
You are going to the show.
Hey, I ain't gonna let you down.
And this is great that Philip Baker Hall ad-libbed when he says that, I'd rather you didn't. Chris Tucker has to have an arc. He has to want to achieve something in this film and then learn something from it. Chris is best when he's fish out of water. You know, and Jackie as well. This is his version of an FBI agent now. Purple, bluish suit with his Versace shades and his fly outfit. And
Carter.
This is something he ad-libbed. I need one of those earpieces immediately. You know, he's the same way that Jackie ad-libs physically when he'll grab a prop and use it in a fight. Chris will use a person to work off of. You know, he'll see that guy wearing a headpiece and he'll say something to him. I'll tell him what I want in the scene, what I want from the scene. I'll say, I don't care how you get there, just this is the point of the scene, this is what I need you to say. He'll make him his own before we shoot. We'll spend time figuring out what he's going to say, which is really ad-lib because he'll take the lines and make them his own, and then I'll make him stick to it. If he changes the lines every single take, we'll never have a scene because you won't be able to cut it.
Good to have you on board.
I've been waiting a long time for this. You guys shoot, it take a long time to practice.
It's not just a straight comedy. It's not a broad comedy. It's an action comedy, and I'm shooting this movie like a thriller. So the pace is very important to me, and if we stopped to tell jokes, the pace would never work. The pacing is very, very important to me. And it cheapens it when you just stop for a joke. It's got to be about the scene or about the situation.
14 classified. That's good.
You don't understand. This is my dream. I'm very excited about working with the FBI.
Well, I'm glad. Listen.
This is the first thing that we shot on the first day. Chris was on fire, man. He was so ready here. He was so on. He said every single word in the scene that was on the page. And because he really spent a lot of time with it and tried to make it, he really liked it. He liked the scene. He liked the way the words are written. You know, Chris speaks differently than most people, and it's hard to get Chris talk. I know Chris talk, and I could change a sentence from regular English to Chris talk. Writers can't really write the Chris talk, but here it wasn't really necessary. It was a great scene for Chris, you know, and Mark Rothman was excellent here. He really put Chris in his place and handled himself well here, I thought. I'm trying to watch a movie every night if I can, especially when I'm shooting the movie, because I want to stay I don't want to be so immersed in my movie that I lose touch with reality or what other people have done or other movies that can influence me, possibly. And, yeah, growing up, I mean, I come from the generation where, you know, I saw a lot of movies on television or on tape, you know, and now, of course, with DVDs and Laserdiscs, I could freeze frame and really learn how the filmmakers did it, because when it just moves to 24 frames, it's like, what? Let me rewind that. I keep rewinding, and I can never figure it out. And then I got first there was the Betamaxes, then there was the VCRs with freeze frame, which is like amazing. I used the shit out of that freeze frame. Initially, the main theme in my temp was Enter the Dragon, and here we brought back Enter the Dragon, and it worked well, but it was kind of, you know, slapsticky, it was hokey. So I said, Lalo, let's write a main theme and then bring back the main theme. This will be Jackie's theme here. And I love the score here, and then Chris's funky bass line as Chris is walking over.
Please tell me you speak English. I'm Detective Carter. Do you speak any English?
And I knew that the chemistry was going to work between these two guys, because when I first introduced them, it was Jackie, myself, and Chris in a room. And Chris was talking, and Jackie was talking, and in the middle of the meeting, Chris leans over to me and says, I don't understand a word he'd be saying. And then Jackie leans over to me, you know, like at the end of the meeting and says, I like Chris Tucker, but I don't understand what he says, you know. And I knew that there was, and I used that in the film. Whenever Jackie was having a tough time saying something, I would go, Chris, say it. And Chris would be like, what the hell did you just say? You don't speak a word of English, do you? And I used that.
Put your bag in the back.
And it worked, and it showed the real relationship between the two guys. So that's something that I took from real life, and I applied it to the film. And that's what I felt they did in Freebie and the Bean, you know. I think Alan Arkin and James Caan knew each other so well, had a chemistry, had a relationship, and they were picking on each other based on their real life situations. And that's what I tried to do in the movie.
The FBI telling you made a mistake.
I can't do that, Carter. I'm sure that you and Mr. Lee will have a nice time together.
I'm warning you, man. You better call the FBI. I'm going to drop his ass off at Panda Express.
You drop this case, Carter. You're suspended for 2 months without pay.
All right, well, you can forget about being mayor then.
Congratulations, Carter.
You know, I think Rush Hour was just a great collaboration. You know, three people get together, you know, Jackie, myself, and Chris, and at the right place, at the right time, with the right people, and it's like magic, and it just works, you know.
Can't go. I ain't getting fired for nobody. You gonna pay my bills?
Sure, y'all.
That's the little girl? Huh?
I wanted to shoot close to where we were going, if possible. And this we were shooting in South Central. It was so hard to shoot this because every time people would be walking down the street or driving their car, Chris Tucker! Smokey! You know, Jackie Chan! Yeah, they were going crazy. There's the Capitol Records building, which I love, which I wanted to show. I mean, I tried to show a lot of Hollywood landmarks. This was great, shooting at the Chinese Man. And having the premiere at the Chinese Man and having the movie at the Chinese Man was really awesome.
Look, John Wayne. John Wayne, you know John Wayne?
John Wayne.
Yeah, John Wayne, man, the dude. Hang out with the dude. I'll be right back. You might see one of your cousins walking around here. I'll be right back.
Find him and stalk him. Star Maps! Right here!
This guy playing the Star Maps guy is John Hawks. He's a brilliant ad-libber, and what I did was I let him ad-lib, but he was ad-libbing and talking as fast as Chris, and then everything Chris ad-libbed had nothing to do with anything, and this, I gotta tell you, was the absolute hardest scene to cut. I mean, it was a brilliant scene on each side, you know, on Chris's scene on its own was brilliant, and John Hawks' scene on his own was brilliant, but together, and the scene, of course, it's not a monologue, they gotta be talking to each other, it made no sense at all. And it's really a plot scene, it's an informational scene. When Chris walked away from Jackie Chan, where was he gonna go, and how was he gonna reveal that he disappeared? So, it was something that we had to make work, and fortunately we didn't have to go back and shoot, do any kinds of reshoots. And I learned something, you know, from this, that I'm never going to not shoot singles on actors when they're making up dialogue, because you can always cut to the single and then cut back to any other shot. Here, also, Lalo's score is great here. I mean, I love what Lalo did here with the score. You know, it's really a mixture between, you know, funky, urban, and big orchestra stuff with some Chinese themes sprinkled all around. This is similar in the theme of Police Story, but not quite. I mean, it's the American version, you know. Chris is the one who's jumping on the back of the bus, which he loved doing and was excited about. And he actually hurt his leg and, you know, he gave up after a few times. Jackie, for some reason, or the Chinese people are against white. White means death, and all these hats on their heads were white. So last minute, my costume designer had to go and bleach all the hats blue, because all the people would not wear hats, all the extras. This was a cool thing that Jackie did on a moving bus, jumped up to the sign and grabbed on and just held up there. You know, and he had to hold up there for like 5 minutes at a time so we could put a ladder or put that truck underneath him so he could drop down. You know, and this is something where, you know, we try to do it like from here on. It's in one, from right here on, from this shot on. It was hard to do it because he was in and out of things. From here on, it's all in one, and it's amazing, and it's so simple and basic, and the audience loves it. It's not a big, incredible stunt, but it's a simple, really, you know, ordinary kind of, you know, in through a trailer, roll over a cab. This is funny. Chris ad-libbed that when he smacked the guy in the head. And then the first time he got on the motorcycle, he dropped the motorcycle and broke it, so we only had one take. It's very true that history repeats itself. And in the 70s, we had Richard Pryor. In the 80s, we had Eddie Murphy. In the 90s, Chris Tucker is really just the superstar comedian of this era. Because of Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy, because he's able to research all the movies and the careers that these guys have had, he's able to apply it to his own career. He sat every night and watched every Beverly Hills Cop, every cop movie with a black star in it, and he said, I'm going to do my version. This was an accident. It was initially supposed to be two cops that appeared here in this scene, but we did it in the beginning in Chris's scene, so we said, let's make the stuntman the guy who pulls the gun on him, and it worked.
Don't move. Drop your guns.
Hey, man. Look, FBI.
I'm a policeman. I'm just showing him how to take a gun from a suspect.
All of a sudden, you speak in English now, huh?
A little.
Ever since Freebie and the Bean, ever since 48 Hours, you've seen this movie before. You could say, I've seen every scene in this movie in another movie. But really what makes it unique and what makes it special is the casting, the two characters and the chemistry between these two characters. If the chemistry was not good between these two characters, the movie would not work.
It makes it easier to find out how full of shit they are.
What the hell did you just say? I like people talk. It's an easy kind of thing. Well, I'm the one full of shit.
We both full of shit.
You full of shit.
Oh, here's something special to Jackie ad-lib right here. Spinning around just to copy Chris. You know, which shows the chemistry between these two guys. And so Jackie's very sharp when it comes to that type of stuff.
You must take me to see Consul Han right away.
I told Jackie, don't worry about your accent. Your character is from Hong Kong. Don't try to speak perfect English. It's not going to be believable, and you're going to have to speak twice as slow. Let it flow. And we'll do a lot of takes until I feel that and the audience understood every word, and it was natural, and it was part of his charm.
Why would they not want my help?
Because they don't give a damn about you. They don't like you. I don't like you.
I don't care.
Jackie was very nervous. Jackie was more nervous about this than doing the most dangerous stunt in the world. He would come to the set, we would have to do it 20 times, and the next day he would come to the set and walk up to me and do the line perfect. Because I said, why didn't you do it like that yesterday? He was like, because I was dreaming about it all night long, saying the line over and over again.
Never touch a black man's radio, boy. You can do that in China, but you can get your ass killed out here, man. I'm gonna show you real music.
When we were shooting the scene, I was playing a record that I had in mind, which is a Puff Daddy record, which got Chris into the groove. And then when I was doing the soundtrack, you know, it was an old record, I didn't want to use it. I went to Jay-Z and I said, make a record that's in this tempo and has this beat, that's a bounce record, which Chris is really like bouncing kind of. And that's what I had him make, is a record that was specifically designed for that scene. And it's a hit record now. It's doing really great. Can I Get Her? By Jay-Z.
We must get to the consulate. What are we doing here?
It's called a shakedown. Very serious police work. And just watch me handle my business and control the space.
I want to help with the investigation. This is my case.
Yeah, okay. Look, you can back me up. When we get in here, you follow my lead and do what I do, okay?
This guy's a stuntman, actually, Wayne King.
What's up, my nigga?
What's up?
Is this weed?
This is another scene that was totally ad-lib, pretty much. You know, I said, Chris, we got to get a weed joke in there, man. But we gotta have a guy smoking weed. But now, instead of, you know, you smoking the weed, you're a cop. You know, people always saw you smoking weed in Fridays and, you know, and Dead Presidents. I said, let's have you reprimanding someone, and then in the end, you take the joint. You know, which shows that you still have a little bit of smoking in you. You know, and Jackie's just playing along there, nodding his head.
What's up, my nigga?
Hey, check that, baby.
Here, coming up in this next room, I use an actor who I love, who I saw in Menace to Society and then Dead Presidents, who's one of my favorite actors, Clifton Powell.
Put him down.
I wanted him to be the Michael Wright character in Money Talks, and he wasn't available, so I said, you got to be in my next film. And we kind of created this scene for him. And this is an example of my influence on, you know, the clothing and the look and the, you know, and the feeling and the vibe. And him and I came up with this idea to get the most ghetto fabulous pimped out red suit ever, you know, which really makes a statement and shows who he is. And Clifton Powell, you know, is just another actor who gives a lot to Chris, you know. Clifton came up with that whole mustache and beard thing. He always likes to create a character and come up with something different. And he's just the flavor, man. He's just great. He just adds so much, you know. My love of urban culture or black culture really comes from my love of black music. You know, my mom growing up would listen to the Delphonics and the Shy Lights and the Temptations and the Four Tops and, you know, all those type of groups. And I just grew up listening to that instead of the Beach Boys or the Beatles or, you know, or stuff like that. And that's the music that I was attracted to. And I chose to do music videos for that type of music because I just loved that music. So I tend to be attracted to films that have black characters in them. And those are films that I grew up loving, you know, like Beverly Hills Cop and 48 Hours and Stir Crazy and Richard Pryor, Lady Sings the Blues, and The Mac, and all these blaxploitation films with Jim Kelly.
I don't know his name. I ain't
Enter the Dragon is my favorite all-time movie ever because it mixes the two things I love, martial arts and blaxploitation.
What's up, my nigga?
I knew if Jackie played it as an innocent line and didn't know what he was saying would really work in the audiences. It was really more for Jackie to be fish out of water, you know, Jackie to be out of his element and then have to fight where he doesn't really want to fight. He's in a situation. Normally, if I was shooting this, you would shoot a master, okay, and let Jackie do the entire fight sequence. Instead, we would do it in a lot of little pieces, which also makes the pace. But still, I try to establish. A lot of times in action movies, when I find that when I'm watching them, I don't know where I am. I don't know a sense of the space. So I try to establish a sense of the space. And this was a hard thing for Jackie to do stunts with other people than his stunt team here. You know, he wanted to use his Chinese stunt team, but it's illegal in the United States to paint them black or try to make them look like the characters in the movie. So, you know, it's very hard. When someone's swinging a pull stick or anything at you, you know, Jackie is a little more timid about it, unlike when someone that he's worked with for 20 years is swinging a pull stick at him. They work well together, and he knows that he's never going to get hit, and he knows the timing of it.
Please.
My editor, Mark Helfrich, picked this song, and I loved it. He played it for me in the temp, and I just kept it. It's this James Brown record, and I kept it because James Brown says, Miami, Florida, where I'm from, and then Atlanta, Georgia, where Chris Tucker's from. And the only thing that he didn't say is Hong Kong, China, where Jackie Chan's from. But if he did, it would have been very ironic and funny.
Mama bought me this suit for Christmas. This is my favorite suit. Now let me go.
I'm going to see you Thanksgiving, all right? Appreciate it.
Hey, hey!
Urban culture has now become pop culture. And guys like, you know, Sidney Poitier and Melvin Van Peebles, who had a lot of difficulty getting, I guess, acknowledgement from the mainstream and had a lot of obstacles in their lives, I assume, have kind of paved the way for guys like Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy and now Chris Tucker to become big stars because of, you know, technology and because of, you know, more people becoming more open-minded to different cultures and different types of people. And, you know, it's like the same way that, you know, America's embracing Hong Kong cinema, you know. Kids in middle America, white kids, are only listening to rap records and Puff Daddy and R&B records. Because pop culture is really urban culture, it's changing the way people think.
I mean, I got you a beef and bean burrito.
Overall, you can have a hit movie with a Latino star, a black star, a Chinese star, a Pakistani star, as long as it's entertaining, you know, and as long as it's a movie that people like. You know, that's really the most important thing for audiences and for studios, you know. I don't think people saying, oh, well, you know, it's a black guy, so, you know, let's only spend this much money. It's not about that. It's that what's this actor's worth in the marketplace? And Jackie Chan's the biggest star internationally around the world, and he's from China, you know, and he's bigger, he's big in Germany and Russia and every other country around the world.
It's very important.
Right here, this guy here, the bald guy, Stanley DeSantis. I hired him because I saw him in Boogie Nights. He was in the stereo store. He was the guy's boss. He was Don Cheadle's boss in the stereo store, and he was great. A lot of people from Boogie Nights are in this film. New Line seems to keep hiring, you know, the directors of New Line just keep hiring them. The actors, all the actresses, like, rotate. Like, Heather Graham went from Boogie Nights to Lost in Space. Now she's doing Austin Powers. This is cool. Jackie takes the gun apart, you know, with one hand. And then this is something that we shot after the preview. We actually built this wall. This isn't a real wall. You know, when he turned the camera, one time he bumped into the camera.
He went over.
This is the reason why we went and shot this, because when we did this, this is really Jackie running up both times, but we had a cut there, see, for a wider angle. I think this was the second or third day of shooting. I'd bring Jackie up to the room, and I'd bring the actors. We block it, and, you know, Jackie came up with the idea of pulling his belt off. I seen him do that thing before. We picked up a gun with his feet in one of his other movies, and I said, oh, you should do that here. And I come with a lot. I'm prepared, you know, and I say, I give him ideas of things that he's done before in other movies or things that I've seen before. You know, my idea was to have him come in through the window and kick him. And he choreographed the way he flew back over the bed and the way he got back up. And, you know, so it's really a collaborative effort. I felt like I knew what Jackie needed. I knew what to do to take a Chopsocky star and put him into an American formula and make it work. I knew how much of the fighting we needed, how much of the comedy we needed. I tried to have an equal balance because Jackie's done all types of films. He's done dramatic films. He's done straight comedic, straight action films. He's done all types of movies. He could do anything, basically. But it was just about the right amount of comedy, the right amount of action to incorporate, enough for American audiences to really appreciate it. But you don't have to be a Jackie Chan fan or a Chris Tucker fan to enjoy this movie.
Excuse me very much. Oh, yes. Look on.
I didn't loop any of Jackie's lines. It's all his voice, his dialogue. And I think because I have an understanding of the English language, where maybe the Chinese directors that he'd worked with, when even though they try to shoot Rumble in the Bronx in English or these other movies, you know, the English came out right, but the intent wasn't behind it, or the feeling or the emotion or the, you know, especially in comedy, you know, it's very hard. You could say a line and it won't be funny. And if you say it differently, Chris Tucker's proven that. You say it in a certain way with a specific tone or timing, and it's hysterical. So it's really the delivery of the lines that I focused on and made sure that, you know, Jackie could read words easily, but does he understand the meaning behind the words? And that was what I was there for, to really explain to him what the, you know, what he was, at this point in the film, what he was trying to accomplish, what his goals were, what his needs were, what his character was, you know, what he was feeling or experiencing, you know, at that moment. This is where the consul first meets Chris Tucker, and Chris is pulling, you know, I love, in these type of movies, you got to have, you know, callbacks, and calling back the G-14 line was a great thing that I think we came up with after the fact, but it really worked here.
Oh, I see, this must be G-14 classified. FBI type stuff. First, let me call my...
I mean, most of the whole movie, I had a plan. You know, because I was able to prep this one, unlike Money Talks. But the reality is, once I got on the set, you know, because the limitations of the, say, the building we were in, or because of the, you know, we couldn't get the angle, a specific angle that I wanted, things change. I mean, I storyboarded a big percentage of this movie, but once we got on the set, Adam and I pretty much threw it away, because the storyboards are really there to help us familiarize us with the story. Then we were able, I mean, on the complex action sequences, I stuck to the storyboards. On the kidnapping, there's certain stuff that I really wanted, certain shots that I really wanted. I got those shots, but I got that and more because I had a plan. If you don't have a plan, then you just figure it out and then you get what you can get. When you have a plan, when you have a storyboard, you can shoot what you boarded and then have alternates. And that's what's great about having a big budget and having a DP that's fast and knowing what you want, is that you can come up with options. And that's really the way to make a good movie, you know, unless every single frame is... But then you're limiting a guy like Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. If I tell Chris, you got to say every single word exactly like it is in the script, it wouldn't be this movie. If I tell Jackie, you can't use an axe in this fight scene when you go into the building, you know, because he comes up with an idea of using an axe instead, then I'm limiting my talent. I'm not getting the most out of them, and it would have been a mistake. And that's why I was able to throw away my storyboards or any other plan that I thought was happened to be brilliant or great. And Adam supported me in that. He said, "Look, if you don't want to use these storyboards, throw them away. You come up with it right here on the set. You trust your own instincts. You go with your gut instincts." And you know, it's something that I know that I'm not afraid of, that I could tackle, but it'll be great to do a movie that has more of a structure as far as, you know, what the actors are going to say in the script, because we had to create the story as we went along. There was the script, there was a structure, but there was a lot of improvising on my part as far as, you know what, this really doesn't work here, and, you know, we're never going to really use this in the film. We should not shoot it. This was a very big, big sequence, and a lot of shots and a lot of different pieces. And this stuff down here was pretty straightforward and pretty simple. And you know, then I got into the building and the relationship between the guys up in the building, down on the ground. And you know, there's a lot of limitations. You can only shoot it on a weekend because we're going to blow up the building, and there couldn't be any people in the street, and there was a lot of logistics involved. And I tried to concentrate on the scene as a whole and say, okay, this scene is a movie within itself. It has to have a beginning, a middle, and end. It has to be clear, and this is what I want to accomplish in this scene. So I had this big plan. I wanted to show, like, the guys entering the building, the guys coming up the elevator, the guys going up the stairs. But in this type of movie, since it is a comedy, and since you have to keep the pace going, I had to, you know, limit it. And I decided, you know what, I'm never really going to use this stuff, so I'm not going to shoot it. This was so much fun, blowing up this building. I told the guy, you got to make it sure it's big. We only have one. I asked for 9 cameras, and I said, it better be big. It better be huge. So they called in extra fire department people. The insurance people came down. We got to block off 4 blocks instead of 2 blocks. I mean, it was a whole discussion. It was unbelievably ridiculous. This alley was like Rat Alley. It was like, it was totally disgusting. And Rob Wilson King, my production designer, did a great job. This alley didn't look at all like this. I mean, the smoke, there's so much you could do. The stuff that the garbage he laid down on the ground, it just gave it so much texture. He painted the walls, the color there.
Hello.
Jackie and I, we went to the location. I showed him this. I said, I need you to get up there. How do you want to get up? And this is where Jackie's talent comes in. He sees something. He says, I'll climb up there. I'll jump across there. And then I set the camera and figure out how I'm going to cover it. This is a really funny moment. This is just Chris Tucker, can't reach the ladder. He jumps up. He thinks he's being really cool, but it comes off really goofy.
I ain't clean, my dude. Jabal, push it down some more.
Now, this is something that was not in the script. This guy appearing with the axe, and we spent like half the day choreographing the whole axe fight and figuring it out, and we had to order this. We didn't expect to break the windows. We had to order fake glass so he could break the windows, and Jackie wanted to lean out that window without being strapped on, And then this is a building that I love. I mean, the location is so amazing. We could have never built anything like this. This the way they shot. I shot this. I took from French Connection when Gene Hackman was in the Santa Claus outfit chasing the black guy, and the way they shot it with the moving cameras. What we did was we used two axes, and he flipped the axe in front of the lens with his hand below the frame line. And the second he pulls it out of the frame, he has a guy standing right next to the wall where Chris Tucker stops, and he slams the axe into the wall. Jackie and a stunt double for Chris on the wide fall. On the short fall, it was Jackie and Chris. And then there's a swish pan right here when the car goes to hit him, which is a very Hong Kong type, style thing, which is the only thing that I took really from Hong Kong cinema, is this quick swish pan. It's a swish cut almost. And they do it in American movies, and I copied it from a Jackie Chan film, which is a swish cut where we're on the car swishes by, and we take another car, and we have it wipe the frame, and then swish back. Because they couldn't be in the frame when the car almost ran them over. And then we have it like they roll back into it and stand up, so it's a trick,
What's this in your hand?
He dropped it.
Oh, shit. Come on.
Where are you going?
I messed up my suit.
Here's the bomb squad sequence. This was in the basement of a bank. They have these bomb squad rooms, these testing rooms. I mean, all these electronics in the background aren't real, but the actual tools that she's using and the type of bomb that it is, I mean, they do these testing things, and this is the exact bomb squad uniform. It was very true to life. I mean, Elizabeth Peña was on my ass and said, we got to keep this real or I can't do a good job for you.
Did that come at a bad time?
I got bad news for you, Johnson. We're all dead.
I was distracted, sir.
Distractions can occur in the field. That's why we call this practice. If you can't handle the pressure, then quit.
And then, I got all these books on detonators, on these switches things, and really they could be anything. People, they could be so creative. They could be a little, they're like, what kind of detonator do you want? I'm like, I don't know, show me a few. And they said, well, it could be anything. It could be a TV remote control, and I was like, really? Wow. And it just needs, I don't remember the technical aspects of it, but. That's how I came up with it. I just came up with the one that looked the coolest, and a cylinder looked the coolest to me.
Oh, now you want me to work with you? You know, I don't have time for this. I got my own shit to deal with. Who are you?
Sorry we got you in trouble.
Yeah. He's sorry he got you in trouble. Look, tell me something about this I don't know, okay? Come on.
It's a remote. Could be nitrocal, could be cross-delay. Definitely not homemade, definitely not American.
I love the lighting in here. I mean, it's really awesome. I wanted a cold kind of... bluish kind of feeling because it was underground and steel and stuff. This is a thing that Jackie did in one of his movies that I said we got to take from because not everyone's seen his movies.
On Christmas about us sleeping together. I'm sorry.
What?
He's just joking. Hi.
This is Chewbacca. This guy was so funny. This is a real prison, a real jail. I think it was a women's jail that's closed down now. And, Chewbacca here. He was in one of my Coke commercials that I did, my Coca-Cola commercials, the father and son Coke commercial, and I just thought he had a great face and he was a great character. He was also in Bulworth. And, I try to get great smaller great characters for smaller roles, and really think about it. This is like a throwaway part, really. I mean, it's something that you just get anybody really to do, and I put a lot of thought into it. This scene is something that you've seen before. You know, the cops come to the jail and they try to, you know, they have you sitting at a table and there's always a overhead light on you and they're threatening you and you're like, you better, you know, everyone's going to expect that. Everyone's going to expect Jackie to smack him around or Chris to, you know, manipulate him. And Chris made me realize when I first met him, when he said, you know, I will kick Jackie Chan's ass. I don't care what black belt he is. I will kick his ass and I will smack the shit out of Chris Tucker. And that made me realize that Chris Penn is a tough guy in real life. You know, he's a professional boxer. So it might be a stretch and might be unbelievable to get Jackie and Chris smacking this guy around to get something out of him.
I'm gonna try to trick you again. Besides, I don't have to frame you. You're gonna do life after they find out you killed the little girl.
I don't know anything about a little girl.
That ain't what I heard. That's what I'm gonna tell everybody.
I don't care what you heard. I don't know anything about a little girl.
I got a big mouth, class.
Let me tell you something.
And so Chris Penn and I came up with the idea that showed that he had another side to him, and that if we had another, if Jackie and Chris had another approach, which is more of, you know, it's for the little girl, show that he had some heart. You know, and that's why he gave in, because he was actually had a daughter, or maybe, you know, he had a little sister or something, and that's what affected him.
I don't care about him, I don't care about you. I care about the little girl. Give me the name.
This is really about Jackie's scene, where Jackie is able to really perform and act and convince him with his dialogue to give up the information.
Fuchao restaurant, Chinatown. Fuchao. Do yourself a favor, get rid of this guy. He's gonna get you killed.
Clyde, thank you, man. I'm gonna come back next visiting time. I'm gonna bring your fat ass some cookies, man. We appreciate this.
This is Chinatown in L.A. The music here, you know, Lalo did it. It was really simple. It's cheesy kind of Chinese music that I heard coming out of, you know, some of the stores walking around that area. I bought the tape. I said, can you do this? And he goes, oh, this is easy. This is like, and, you know, we're not poking fun at it. We're not trying to do any, you know, mimic any stereotypes or anything with the music or make fun of anybody. But it's really the music that I heard coming out of this area. You know, it's played on loudspeakers on that block over there. Now, this is something normally that when I read the script, I said, God, how is this going to work? Because at this point in the film, you want to get to, you want to, you know, they're really following the bad guys. And you really want to get to a confrontation between them and the bad guys. And, you know, you want to move the story along. It's not a really time for jokes, you know. It's not a time, you know, for them to sing and dance. But I shot it, you know, being unsure of it, and it just works so great. The chemistry between these two guys.
Everybody knows War.
I thought the song that we picked, War, which is like a universal song. Young hip-hop kids love it now, and older adults who lived through the Vietnam War love it, you know. It crosses all boundaries as far as the demographic or who it's reaching or who can relate to it. But more importantly, the scene works when I saw it in my first cut. And it didn't, most, if I saw a movie and it stopped and it was a thriller and it stopped in the middle like this to sing and dance, I would be like, oh God, why did they have to do that? You know, and I set it up where like, we just gotta sit here and wait for the stakeout, we just gotta wait. And it doesn't really make sense that they're blasting this war scene out of their car and they're on a stakeout. So yeah, I told them what I wanted. I said, basically, Chris and Jackie, Chris, you're gonna have to teach him how to dance. Then he has to teach you some moves.
Do it again. Do it again. Like this.
And I think this is like the greatest moment in the film. This is the moment where you really feel their chemistry and their bonding. When he's showing him how to take away the gun here, you know. It's really great in showing that Chris isn't perfect, you know. His character is not perfect. And he's not, as sophisticated as Jackie Chan, but he's trying and he's learning.
One, two, one will be inserted.
I took the shot from Ransom, pretty much. It's not as wide, but when they had the overhead shots in Ransom of the table with all the electronic equipment on it. And Scorsese does a lot of overhead shots in Taxi Driver and stuff like that. Any overhead shot is just a cool shot. If you compose it correctly, it's just really, really, really cool.
That's how serious I am. Take the money to the alley behind the Fuzhou restaurant in Chinatown.
I don't know why he was holding a cigarette there, but it's a cool thing to do, hold a cigarette. This is a scene that, again, you know...
Damn, Chin. Some greasy shit.
It's real. Chris Tucker doesn't like to eat anything he doesn't know, which is soul food and cheeseburgers and hot dogs and...
I didn't say nothing about no soul food. I said you got some better food. I don't want that greasy shit. How you gonna sell a big box of grease?
I'm genie on my queen.
I'm genie on what?
Come on. I'm no punk bitch.
I ain't no punk bitch.
I told him to say that. I'm no punk bitch. And then they just started going at it, and they kept doing it.
That's a ew.
Is it good?
Very good.
What you got?
Camel's hump.
What?
Camel's hump.
Now, this is a scene where Chris really is able, and Jackie, to pull off the dramatic moments. We actually shot this twice. Jackie was having a tough time with the lines. It's actually one of the outtakes at the end of the movie when he couldn't say the lines. And it was just a very difficult thing, and they just weren't gelling. And my line producer said, is there anything that you want to redo? Is there anything else that you feel is missing? I said, yes, let me reshoot this. And he made it as part of the schedule.
I'm sorry about that, man.
And I was happy I did it. I was really happy I did it. And I showed it to Chris, the cut scene. And he said, you're right, we should redo it. I said, what do you think of redoing? Because I don't... And Jackie, too. He was like, oh, not that again. But he was like, yes. You know, yes, we should do it. We should do it. Because he knew he wasn't at his best. And this is where really Chris really got it as far as the emotional aspect. And the thing, you know, my daddy, your daddy thing, even though they're poking fun and they're joking about it, it really shows more of the bond and more of the chemistry between these two guys. And the thing that they had, you know, together, that was a similarity. You know, even though they're from two different worlds, both their dads were cops.
Don't talk about my dad. Hey, that your boy?
Yes, let's go.
Mark Helfer came up with the idea, we got to go to an insert, because there wasn't an insert there. It was just, you know, here's the ID, and the joke is, I'm not 5'10", you know. And I had the New Line art department put an afro and a mustache on him. It was a shot that Chris hadn't approved. And Chris, I saw Chris when he screened the movie, and I was cracking up. I saw him cracking up, and I was, like, so happy because he could have done that. Take that a stupid shot out of the movie. How can you make fun of me like that? You know?
Take this. Man, act like you from out of town.
I am from out of town.
Well, don't act like a cop. Act like a tourist or something. Don't be so obvious.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, no problem.
Hi, how are you, Wally?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you, Moon.
For one?
No, for two. I'm here for a meeting with Mr. Juntao.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know Mr. Juntao.
Look, maybe you don't understand. I'm Mr. Juntao's lawyer, legal advisor. He done got into some shit again. He told me to come down here, and I'm very busy, man. I ain't got time, you know, to be coming down here this late, but I'm down here. My wife want me to come home. My baby done shitting all over the house. He need diapers. Would you please go, Mr. Juntao?
But I have already told you. I don't know, Mr.
Look,
Juntao.
Do you think I came down here for nothing? You give me some gas money? You got $5 on you? Would you please go upstairs and tell Mr. Juntao to get his ass down here then?
This is an actual restaurant that didn't look at all like this, that Rob Wilson King totally transformed. Got all these, we call it tchotchkes, junk, basically, and put it.
How's your camel hump?
This is a scene that I needed to cut outside, and I wasn't sure. This is Jackie's assistant and one of Jackie's stuntmen, who's actually one of the bad guys upstairs, but no one notices that. I thought Chris can make fun of Chinese food, Jackie can make fun of Roscoe's chicken and waffles. This is something that Chris ad-libs, see, just something, he smells the food. This is my favorite shot in the whole movie. This is a shot that I designed, you know, after I saw the scene, the actors, you know, I blocked the scene with the actors. It's one steady cam shot, it's like a 2-minute shot or whatever it is, a minute and a half shot. And it's the reveal of the bad guy. And, you know, you never see him. He comes into the frame here, and then we push in, and the camera pans around, and you hear his voice saying, "No, wait." And then we reveal him.
Get the gun out of here. Make sure those two don't leave.
Adam Greenberg was an expert back in the day at handheld, and he wouldn't do it for me. He was like, no, more handheld for me, but we could do it. So we shot a handheld shot, which I tend not to do because it sometimes takes you out of the movie. This is a great acting moment for Jackie, I thought, you know. It's a hard thing. It could be hokey, you know. He goes to, I said, how are you going to stop from drinking that poison? He sees the necklace. He reacts to it. And then she, you know, looks at him. He looks up. She walks away, and the camera pushes in. It's just a great little moment. My camera movement came from his reaction, really.
Juntao will see you.
It's about time. Downstairs, y'all. What's up, man? What y'all watching?
This is a scene that Jackie and I and Chris spent some time in there before we shot one frame, and we had to figure out really how to approach it. It's a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of action. It's a hard thing to do, and we have to be funny too. And it's one of the, I think, one of the better scenes in the movie, as far as the comedy and the action are concerned. It's kind of like the best of both worlds in one scene, and that's what, why it works so well.
'Cause I'm his half brother.
These are all Jackie stunt guys.
I'm black in these. We all the same. Oh, hey, man. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay, you gonna kill
me? I read a review that said that Ken Leung, who sang, the blonde guy, was incredible at his martial arts, but he didn't throw one kick or do one punch.
Somebody can shoot somebody. That's what I'm talking about. Bag back, give me some room. You don't know who you're messing with. I'm not that young.
The guy who just kicked right there is Ken Lo.
Which one of y'all kicked me?
He's actually Jackie Chan's personal bodyguard, and he's 6-time like Kung Fu world champion. Look at that kick he just gave Chris. And just Chris, you know, Chris thought he was going to be like a badass in here and, like, you know, kick some ass. But the funny thing is, when he started getting beat up, the comedy really started coming out.
Let's talk about this, man. Hold it. No, 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 no. What do I mean? Hey, man, the misunderstanding. Come on, let's pray about this. Come on.
FBI, huh?
No, I ain't FBI. I'm a security guard. I work at the mall.
Now, wipe yourself off. You're bleeding.
Oh, hell no. I thought he just playing, man. He playing. He mean that. He meant cut me loose. Let me go.
Come on. I'll wait for you.
You'll notice that there's a little something there when he kicks, and that's dust that Jackie Chan puts on his feet just to add some extra impact. But he won't tell me what the formula is and how to make it linger in the air like that. These are all things, you know. Jackie saw the chair. He said, "I'll do this chair." You know, this whole gun thing. It's just all fun stuff. It's like, you know, and he really did a good job at incorporating Chris into this fight scene. Because of course, you see Jackie's doing all the fighting. Chris is just kind of struggling there a little bit. He's not fighting really. That gunshot. That's the one gunshot I had Jackie direct without me there. I said, "Jackie, will you do this gun flying through the air?" And he took the camera himself and shot it himself, I think, without a camera.
Hey,
yeah, these guys are, I mean, these guys are totally now, this is the real bonding. And this is where all those moves that he taught Chris, and still, you see how funny Chris is. It's like they're teaming up together to beat up the bad guys. I mean, this is a great heroic moment for both Jack and Chris. And in the end, they don't win. They got to get the hell out of there because, you know, they could still get killed. There's still danger involved. You know, it's not like, oh, we're the superheroes and we're not capable of losing. They're still running for their lives here. And this is something that Jackie came up with, which is, you know, I was very unsure of because it was very hokey, the way they fell down those stairs, and it worked, and the audience loves it. I mean, it's just the way he did it. They bumped into each other and slid down these stairs. I love the shootout here because the sound design here, is really incredible. Tim Chow and Don Maloof are my sound designers, and the sound is so intense. And initially, what they would do is they would make Chris's gun the loudest and the bad guy's gun really weak, and that's what they do. The hero always gets the loud sound. I said, make both guns ear-shattering, so it's exciting. This is the actual kitchen. They wanted me to build this kitchen. I said, no, let's use a real kitchen in the back. And that's a set right there. That's a real alley, but that thing is a set behind them. It's not the real kitchen there. That's what we built, which is amazing. I mean, just the way we tie in, you know, sets to real locations and make it feel so seamless is always amazing. It's movie magic.
I ain't gonna talk to goddamn bass.
This is some ad-lib stuff right here that Chris is saying, stuff on his back. His off-camera stuff he can make as funny as his on-camera. You know, it's great.
I got everything under control.
With the success of Rush Hour, I was, you know, able to meet a lot of my elders, the filmmakers that influenced me, that I watched and admired and loved. I met Jonathan Demme, which is, one of my favorite directors ever, and Roman Polanski and Jim Brooks and Michael Bauhaus, who's the cinematographer who shot all of Scorsese's movies. And these guys really made me feel when I met them that, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm making movies. I'm expressing myself. I'm telling stories, and I'm just doing what I know best. I'm not trying to, to do anything different than they had done when they were my age, making films. So, it really made me feel like I could do anything, and it was really inspirational to meet these guys. And, one of my biggest inspirations was John Cassavetes, who unfortunately is no longer with us, who was not only one of my favorite directors, but one of my favorite actors. And had always, my film professor at NYU told me that I should remake a movie that the plot didn't work. Don't remake Lolita or Psycho. Don't remake a film that's a classic. Remake a film that you love the plot and that you can make it your own. And Killing of a Chinese Bookie was by far my favorite movie. It was a movie that didn't work on many levels, but it was a movie that I always loved. I was just fascinated by gangsters, by naked women, by gambling, and, it's a movie that I always wanted to remake. And so after I finished Money Talks, Mike DeLuca at New Line said, what do you want to do? Basically he was saying, what's your personal film? What's your labor of love? And I said, I want to remake Killing of a Chinese Bookie. And he said, that's a great idea. So I went and met with Nick Cassavetes and convinced him to give me the rights, and I basically told him, what my version of the movie was. And he loved the idea so much, he said, I want to write it for you. And we went down to Miami because I wanted it to be based in Miami. And we did all this, I took him to all these locations and introduced him to all these characters and the type of people. But basically we stuck to the plot. And I just kind of guided him to try to write my version of that movie. And I knew that if I had him on my side, if I had him writing the script for me, I would get less criticism and less abuse from my fellow peers. And hopefully, that'll be my next movie, or a movie that I make very soon in the future, because it's a movie that I feel that I can make my own. I mean, it's a movie that I know that I will make, that people, it was a movie that no one really went to see in the 70s. But for some reason, everybody loved it. And I don't know, all I know is what I loved about it. And what I love about it is that it was very real. It was like watching, a film about people, that you were there with them, experiencing what they're going through, and I'm able, and I feel that I'm going to be able to capture that in my version of that movie.
Sorry, I couldn't stand by and do nothing.
This is, I put the song on, and I just let it play, and I just let the camera roll, and the crew was having the best time, because she's wearing these little undies and this little t-shirt, and she's dancing with the spoon and cooking in the kitchen, and...
Hello.
Hey, what's up, baby?
Man, you got guts calling me. I'm gonna hang up.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't hang up. Look, you know what? You was right about me, all right? I'm sorry.
You know, this is, Chris is being funny, but he's being serious. He, you know, she says, are you on drugs? Because it's not in his character. It was a natural reaction. And, you know, I tried to shoot that by the airport because we didn't know that Chris is following him yet. I didn't want to, you know, I was deciding, I did shots to tie them two together, but I didn't really want to show that where he was going because I wanted the reveal of when he's coming up to be really great.
You think you can help me?
I'll see what I can do.
No, I don't need you to see, Johnson. I need you to do it. Can you do it?
Okay, Carter.
All right, one other thing.
Yeah?
What color pen did you get on?
I feel that every cut in this movie cuts like butter. It really cuts well. It really flows, and it helps with the pace. And nothing is jarring, and you always know where you are. And that's what I accomplished as a storyteller and a filmmaker, is to allow the audience to know where they are, where they're looking, and what they're supposed to look at. And look, I'm not always that obvious about it. There's stuff that I'd like them to see after the second. You know, I hear that people are going to see the movie 2 and 3 times, and I'm sure they're seeing things that they didn't see the first time that they saw, because not everything is always up in your face, up tight, close, and claustrophobic. This is totally ad-lib. This is something we came up with last minute. I said, you know, in order for Chris to pull it off, he needs a good actress. So I called Jackie and said, do you know any Asian actresses in America who have done movies before who are really good? And he called, this is one of the Jackie's friends, and she's done, I guess, a lot of movies and television in Hong Kong. And she just, you know, she reacted well to him, and it really worked. And this is a scene here. That's a very important scene, you know, and if you listen closely, it really doesn't make sense, but it does.
Go away. I've disgraced.
This is where Chris was really able to pull off the dramatic moments, you know, like he did in Dead Presidents. And he really has some natural acting ability. You know, a lot of comedians, young comedians, they can be funny, but they just can't pull off the dramatic and make it believable and make it real.
My father was killed making a routine traffic stop in broad daylight by some punk who didn't want no ticket. When his partner supposed to get out the car and backed him up, but never did. My father was just as much devoted as you. And now he's dead. And for what? A traffic ticket and some punk? You tell me what's the honor in that?
My friends were in the theater. They were like, they told me, God, we were choking up in that scene. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, we were really affected by it. It was really powerful. I'm like, wow, maybe I could do a dramatic film, you know?
For 15 years, until China resumed control of Hong Kong, Jun Tao was the most powerful crime lord in Southeast Asia.
This is a scene here that we really didn't need. We could have lost it easily. But, you know, most of the time people are excited about seeing Jackie and Chris on the screen. And so I try to cast people that would keep the audience's interest when they weren't on the screen. And these are the type of guys that can really carry it and pull it off no matter what they're talking about. But this is really a plot thing that we added in that we really could have lived without.
My advice to you is pay the money.
There's the required set piece, you know, in every movie for the third act, especially in action movies or thrillers. And I wanted to I wanted to find a set piece that was unique, that stood out, that was different than anything that anybody else has ever shot. So we luckily got the LA Convention Center and we decorated it. And it was a combination of the freshness of the set piece and the set decoration and the choice of shots in order to tell the story and show where we were. The location is so big, you can get lost. I mean, I open it with these big, wide shots, so everybody had an idea of the consoles there on the stage. You know, the crowd is over there. Up those stairs is where everyone's entering from. And people have a sense of where you are. And so when the action begins and things are quick cut and they're fast and they're tight, people are going to still feel like they know where they are. And they're not going to get confused. I try to decide when I'm looking through the lens, where do I want the audience looking? That's how I compose my shots. And it's based on my eye. It's not right or wrong. There's 50 different ways to compose stuff. Adam and I would have discussions. Oh, bad composition. But I go, no, this is right because this is where I want my eye to look. This is where my eye is. So I have to compose the frame to where my eye wants to go. And, you know, the details in this type of movie are very important. You know, it's funny because coming from NYU Film School, like, you know, Jonathan Demme, everything is like very much in the center, you know, and when you're shooting an anamorphic lens, there's so much room to the right and left, and then I try to adjust my eye. Adam, when he looks through the frame, he looks at it in 1:6:6 in TV format, and I can't, and he interprets it, and it goes, he squeezes it, it goes from in his head to unsqueezed to squeezed. I have to see it squeezed, because I'm training my eye. He shot so many movies. I'm training my eye for the widescreen format. When I shot music videos, I shot it in TV format. And then I started, knowing that I wanted to do movies, started composing stuff in a wider format, even on my music videos, even for television. So I've been training my eye for a widescreen format for a while now. And, you know, it's something that it's very hard to explain. It's just something that, you know, no one can say what makes for bad composition.
Something to lose. Wait, Ray, I'll be right back.
Future between our two countries. The more we see the differences and similarities.
Hey!
This is something that seems familiar because it's in all my movies. Chris Tucker getting up and showboating and making a speech and getting everyone to exit the building. You know, but it works, you know, and it's fresh because it's a, you know, it's a new movie, it's a new set piece, it's a new situation. Chris is in a tuxedo.
I don't believe this. Have all the agents hold their positions.
All right, everybody take care of holding your positions.
What is going on?
Get your old ass out the building. Come on, lady, put your ass down and get out of here. Woman, the exit over there, you're going to get your head blowed off.
I was just going to do an insert, but everyone talked me out of it, said it wasn't tasteful when he goes, titties, titties, titties. You know, I was going to do an insert of a girl's big titties going across the room, but everyone said it wasn't tasteful, so they talked me out of it. I didn't shoot it.
Han, 6 blocks of C4 are wired to your daughter in a car outside. You know, before the changeover, most of this exhibition was in the hands of a single private collector. Me. I worked most of my life to acquire and catalog.
Even though you don't really see Chris, I didn't establish Chris in a big wide shot, you know that basically he's somewhere in that area, and it works, you know. You know, you see the geography there, but you don't see Chris and Jackie. You see the reverse, and then you see the side shot, so you know where the console is, but you don't see Chris. I wanted to keep it separate, because what if I didn't want to cut away to them? I wanted to leave my options open, you know.
Just be patient. My transportation will be here shortly. Stay calm.
Hey, man, I was just
going
to tell you, you was in the red zone.
This is the callback of Jackie teaching Chris how to take the gun away. You see how he looked at the gun and got excited about it? That really makes the audience like it even that much more. Oh, yeah, Chris Tucker opening his eyeballs. Is just, I said, you got to open your eyes right before you smack him. And then he added this line here, you know, tell your friends about me, which is just a funny, funny line. This is another example of Chris, you know, being able to pull off a dramatic moment. You know, this girl's never been in front of a camera before, you know, and she did an excellent job here. We, you know, I was like, I felt bad because we had to keep putting the bag on her head, and it was hard to breathe underneath that bag, and the teacher is on the set, and I'm like, oh my God, I hope I'm not abusing her, but she was a trooper, and she did a great job.
Where are you?
Saying is great here. I mean, the intensity here, you really believe that, you know, and that he's capable of, and this is the point, he winks right there, but there's a line that I lost. You know, it was like very much a Schwarzenegger one-liner action movie where Sang says, you will be the first to die.
I
you know, this sequence was not written as, like this. You know, when I got, you know, and we got a rewrite out of Vince McMahon, who really is great at structuring. He did a rewrite on Money Talks, and he's great at structuring action pieces, set pieces, and figuring it out. You know, it's hard to write on the page where everyone's going to be, but that's what I like to do. I like to do a shot on every person so everyone knows or has an idea where everyone is at every time. So you don't feel like you're losing anybody, you know.
Huh? I got your bomb right here.
Suya!
Mama!
No!
Mama! Wanna blow something up? Huh? Come on. Push the button. Come on. Push the button.
This is great, you know. This is part ad-lib, part scripted. And I said, just repeat anything Chris says. And I told Chris, don't say the F word, you know, or anything bad. But she would have done it, you know.
Push the goddamn button.
She's never been in front of a camera before, and I'm very patient, and I explain to her, you know, I try to give her situations where I said, think about if it was real, or think about, she's a little kid, but she acts like an adult. You know, she's very mature, very smart, tons of personality. This is hard, it's all little tight pieces, like, you know, but you still know where you are. You know where you are. And that's Mark's amazing editing. And he really knows how to structure an action sequence. And I saw it. I'm like, wow, I don't even have to... You know, I tried to change it. I looked at every single shot and tried to figure out how to make it better because I'm just anal and have to go through every single frame of this movie and figure out, you know, and sometimes going through the footage, Mark's already been through it 20 times by the time he shows it to me, then I go through it another 20 times, and sometimes we discover some amazing stuff, you know, but it helps me learn what I have.
Say again, Dan, do you read?
We restructured this whole sequence pretty much, but it was there. You knew where you were, you knew what was going on, and I just basically would change the, you know, the performances and know this should happen before this. As I look through the footage, I come up with ideas, you know, and it's great. This scene is part movie convention, the rig, part, you know, reality. She has to do something heroic, I felt. Why do we set up that she's a bomb squad, you know, person, and why do we set this up unless we show her defusing a bomb at one point? And there was a lot of things that were in the script that changed. But basically, we try to keep, you know, you shoot the footage, you think you try to figure out as you're shooting it, and then when you see it, you recreate the entire film in the edit. You know, it's like, does this make sense? Is it clear? Can we get away with it if it's not?
You okay?
Yes.
Here's the thing that Chris came up with that's brilliant.
I know that ain't the bomb.
Just to show that he's really not the tough guy, or that, the, you know, when it comes to a bomb, get that bomb away from me. Get that bomb away from me. Take it up to Juneteenth, you know. So it's really great.
Go this way. I'll go that way. All right, go.
Right here, he goes from the convention center into this set, which you don't even notice is not the LA Convention Center. I shot this in Hong Kong. And at the Golden Harvest Studios, the famous studios where they shot all Jackie's movies and all of Enter the Dragon. And this is everyone's favorite scene, really. I mean, you know, for, as far as a Jackie Chan set piece is concerned, you know, it's fun, and it's stunts, and it's exciting. Shooting off a gun, taking the bullet out, you know, it's just like, it's great. You know, it's what people come to see a Jackie Chan movie for, but it's not chop sake. You know where you are. It's not fast paced. It's not, you know, it's realistic. He kicks them, boom, and it's a fun scene. Fight scenes are always done in pieces. They're never done in masters. He never wants me to shoot a master, but I tell him I got to show the audience where they are, where we are, and you know, you could cheat some stuff, but also this is a debate too. You know, we came up with this on the set. It has to blow in the end, you know, and so, you know, you save the vase, but then, oh, it breaks in the end, so everyone in the audience is like, oh, you know, and they're with you the whole time. Initially, Jackie was going to get up under the beams with some kind of pulley that Chris was going to help him, but it was just going to take too much screen time. Had him climb up and get up there, and
Come
on the roof.
Roger. Get those on yet.
This was cool. He was hanging on the edge and jumps over the side.
She's out!
Sour chicken ass.
Okay, this scene here was a nightmare. We came back to the set 4 times.
Yeah? I don't even like it. Go ahead.
It's a problem when you have to come back to a location several times. You know, the problem that we had was that I shot this shot right here, and I didn't put us have a second camera.
What'd you say?
Fight like a man. When you're shooting Chris Tucker for future directors working with Chris Tucker, you got to put a second camera on him. He was so funny and so great in the wide, and I didn't get it in the close. And then when we came back the next time, he can never had the same energy or the same performance, and never could match. I'm glad we came back like 4 times, because by the 4th time we figured out, we remembered when he threw the handkerchief on Chris and he said, "Wipe yourself off, you're bleeding." We said, "Oh, perfect." Jay came up with the idea of doing this callback of,
"Wipe yourself off, man. You dead."
This is a set piece here. This is all a set because the convention center wouldn't let us, you know, have people all the way on the top. So we built this huge set to match the convention center. People were like, "How'd you do that?" You know, but we built it. It was very expensive, and it was very, you know, that right there is a set. And I tied it together with the shots from below. The money comes out of the frame and enters the frame, and then you feel, look at that, you feel like you're in the same place. Brilliant. I mean, just that one ad lib is like brilliant, you know, and the audience loves it. Originally, the vest was going to explode. If it was C4 and it blew up, the entire convention center would have crumbled, and then everyone would have been dead. Chris Adler that line, which was great. And we didn't have it there, and I was like, "God, this sucks. We got to blow it up." Then I found the line, and I said, "We don't have to blow it up." I went back and looked in the footage. When we were scouting locations, I brought Jackie to the convention center, and I said, "Jackie, you need to fall into this pool. We weren't going to do it that high, you know." And he said, "No, I could fall from all the way from the top." He said, "You could fall from 150 feet? I said, "Yeah, no problem." He'll send one of his stunt boys up there, who's 20 years younger than him, to go up and do it. And if they live, then he says, "If he could do it, then I could do it." The craziest thing ever is that I made him do it twice. I said, "You look like Jackie Chan, the superhero. You're just floating through the air. You got to move your body, and you got to swing your arms and kick your feet like you're falling." And he's like, okay. And I convinced him because what I was saying made sense, and I had a point of view, and he understands more than anybody what I needed to make a great movie. He knew that I was...
Thank you.
That's a real reaction of like, ew, like a little kid when they get kissed, they wipe their face, and that's what was so natural and real about it. And I praise Chris for staying in character. the set piece that we just saw, which was outside, it was very similar as well to Money Talks. And I hate movies with three or four endings.
Only your friendship.
I wanted to end the resolution of the cops thing where he tells Chris, we came up with that afterwards. It was in the script, but we did it at the airport, and we came up with the idea last minute to put them on the airplane so we have these, you know, the sequel potential and the real bonding of these guys. Because we could have brought everyone together right here, but it would have just ended, and I think it would have been anticlimactic. So at the airport, we shot this once here. It didn't work for me because it was all at one location. And I said, let's move it to another, to the airport, right before he gets on the plane. And we went and shot that. Chris is back in his leather jacket. He's out of his FBI. He's back to himself. And these two guys come, and they offer him... You know, he did a great job, and they offer him. We see that Russ is still alive. He only got shot in the arm, and we offer him the opportunity. You know, now he's going to be FBI, and he stands up for himself, and he's like, you know what? I'm not FBI. I'm LAPD. So he really, this is the end of his arc, really, where he realizes, you know, I don't care all these dreams about me being a big time FBI. You know what? I'm who I am. I'm LAPD, and people love that. They love when the fish out of water finds himself and is like, I know who I am.
I got an idea. Why don't y'all take that badge and shove it up your ass? All up in your ass. I'm LAPD.
Bitch.
First class. I like this. This is tight. I like this.
Can I take your jacket, sir?
My jacket? No, you take this bag.
And then this is the final set piece. They're going on vacation. This is going to set up the sequel. And now instead of Jackie being a fish out of water in L.A., Chris is going to be the fish out of water over in Hong Kong. It'll be great. And then we also call that, we bring back the war thing here, which works so well, which is a great conclusion. It's a great way to end the movie, the way we brought back the Barry White in the end of Money Talks.
Let me go to Hong Kong with you. You know, I ain't been on no vacation in 5 years.
We can hang in my crib. I will show you my hood.
Now you can show me a couple of them Chinese girls. When I get over there, I want a massage because I'm going to get buck wild. No police work for 2 weeks? How long is
it? You know, I think Rush Hour was just a great collaboration. You know, three people get together, you know, Jackie, myself, and Chris, and at the right place, at the right time, with the right people, and it's like magic, and it just works, you know.
Oh, hell no. Do it! Give me another seat!
Listen to me! See, Jackie Chan typically in his movies will put all these outtakes in, which are mostly him getting hurt, being carried off in stretchers, and of course we didn't have that in our movie, but really the reason I did it was to show that Jackie Chan in the movie was playing a character. Jackie Chan was playing this Detective Lee from Hong Kong. When you see the outtakes, you see the real Jackie Chan. You see that he's personable, that he's got a personality, that he's charismatic, that he's charming, that he's likable, that he's sweet, and that's what really sends it over the top. For Jackie Chan fans and for an audience who doesn't know who Jackie Chan is, because they see, wow, Jackie's really playing a character. And you see what a difficult time Jackie had with the English and how Chris didn't know who Chelsea Clinton was, which I think I got to commend Chris on letting that go, because Chris is one person who will never want to lose a joke. If he sees a movie and people are reacting to it, no matter how bad it makes him look, no matter how bad, and it doesn't make him look bad. He didn't know. He just doesn't know. He doesn't, you know, he thought it was Chelsea Grammer or something, or Kelsey Grammer, you know, and it was a, and it was really great of him, I thought, to say, that was really funny. You should keep that Chelsea Clinton thing in. And I think that was a bold move, and that's why he's going to be a superstar. That's why he's going to be as big as Eddie Murphy or bigger, because he can make fun of himself, you know? He's not afraid to make fun of himself. He's not afraid to show his different sides, you know, and that's what's great.
You're right. Let me see your badge, buddy.
I went to NYU Film School, which is a way to go. It's not the only way, but it's a way to go. And film school doesn't really teach you how to get a job. They teach you how to make movies. So your film that you create in film school is really your resume. It's something that you have to show people to hire you, because people are going to hire you based on your work and your work alone. I mean, your work has to speak for itself. And, you know, I learned from being in film school and not having anybody in my family in the business or not knowing anybody in the business and coming from Miami Beach, that you had to create your own opportunity. So what I did was I sent a letter to 40 of the biggest people in the industry. And, you know, I sent it to Steven Spielberg, to George Lucas, to Steve Ross, the chairman of Warner Brothers at the time, to Peter Guber, anybody who was in the top 40, you know, in entertainment, in People Magazine, or wherever I found the list, I don't remember. And I got 39 of the nicest rejection letters. And it was really great because the people on top are really accessible because they have so many secretaries. They answer all your letters and they respond to you. And I was basically, what I did was I sent a clip of my movie, called my short film called Whatever Happened to Mason Reese, with a letter requesting money for my student project. I really didn't need the money, I just wanted the relationship. And then the dean of NYU calls me in and says, Steven Spielberg called here looking for you. I didn't believe him. I was in shock. And he said, yeah, here's the number. Go back to your dorm and call. So I go to my dorm. I call up and they say, Steven Spielberg's office. And I go, is Steven Spielberg in? Mr. Spielberg in? They go, who's calling? I go, Brett Ratner. They go, oh, he's expecting your call. Hold on, please. And I was freaking out waiting for him to come to the phone. And he couldn't come to the phone because he was in a production meeting or something. I don't remember exactly what happened. And then they said he'll call you back tomorrow. So the whole night I couldn't sleep. I was freaking out. Until the next morning I get a call from this woman by the name of Kathleen Kennedy, who I didn't know who she was at the time, and she said, Steven saw your clip and he thinks it's great, but you know, we don't finance short films, we don't give money to NYU, we give it to USC, and you know, good luck in the future and send us the film when it's done. I'm like, but Miss Kennedy, you don't understand. You've got to give me this money because this is an important film, and this, you know, and I don't know, I went on and on and on. And then 2 weeks later, the dean calls me, I got a check from Spielberg. And I went crazy. I blew up the check the size of my wall. I was ready to put in the film, Steven Spielberg presents a Brett Ratner film. I carried around the check in my pocket, and I would show it to girls. I didn't cash the check for like 2 weeks. I would like show it to girls every day in the hallway at school. And it was amazing. And you know, I end up winning, you know, best film at NYU and you know, a bunch of other student awards, and I never ended up sending it to Steven Spielberg, and because I never thought it was good enough, you know. And finally, one day I got the opportunity to meet him, and I introduced myself, and I told him I sent him this film. He goes, yeah, I remember the film. Like, actually, I never sent you the whole film. I just sent you a clip. And he's like, you should have sent me the whole film. You should have sent me the whole film. And we talked for 4 hours, and I was asking him how he did this one shot in Schindler's List. And he said, oh, he took that from a John Ford movie. And I remember, you know, doing his shot in Money Talks and taking it from one of his movies. And it just made me feel, when talking to him, like, it made it all very tangible and feasible. And very real, instead of being something that I, you know, when I asked him about something that I didn't understand how he did it, and he explained to me how he had done it, it just made a lot more sense to me and made me realize that I could really do anything.